SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Today, March the 8th, 2021. Craig Mitch, Davis Maddock. You can follow us on Twitter at SportsGrid. In this hour of the show, plenty of fantasy to cover, a couple of odds to go over as well on FanDuel. Not to mention, we've got college basketball taking full force over the next month. March Madness officially is here this week, conference tournament championships. And then next week, it is the NCAA tournament. And Davis, a lot of good things on television during the day, which is always fun about college basketball, and I think even more so over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best. You know, what's interesting, though, is for me, I'm very used to sports being on all the time. It's new for, like, American sports fans only, but there are pretty much soccer games on all day long during the day over in England and Spain. Like, I will be, you know, we're doing the show and I got a, you know, a Premier League game on that I'm monitoring. We have the Spanish league that plays, the Italian league that plays during the day. So it's nice for the American audience, but it's not that much of a change for me personally.
Well, I think for me it is a little bit, but yes, totally get where you're coming from, no doubt. Here are our headlines here to start the show. We have a light spring training game scheduled today. They have baked in several off days for the teams because of just the nature of what's going on in baseball this season. Appalachian State, Georgia, Sun Belt Conference Championship game tonight. Georgia State, App State, Mercer, UNC, Greensboro play a conference championship game tonight. Georgia State, by the way, 7 over App State, UNC Greensboro -5 against Mercer, if you're considering betting that. And Jake Odorizzi signs a 2-year deal with the Houston Astros. Another story that was interesting yesterday, Davis, that we haven't gotten to yet. I don't think it'll affect fantasy baseball all that much, but given that I kind of lived through the COVID issue with the Marlins last year, it is stunning to me that these guys, and maybe it shouldn't be, are still breaking protocol. Like, I think we've seen the NBA do a pretty good job of doing this year. Maybe yesterday's a bad example of that with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons being out. But Cleveland, who had a major protocol break last year with Clevinger and Plesac, to the point where they traded Clevinger after the year, have now had one again, as Franmil Reyes and Jose Ramirez are now going to have to be away for the team, I guess, because of a barbershop issue. And then Reyes went on Instagram and posted a picture of him with Pedro Strop, relief pitcher, and then Strop got taken away from the team. So Cleveland's going to find out today how long those players have to be away from the team. And I don't think it should affect fantasy all that long. Maybe it knocks a guy down 5 picks or something like that in ADP on the NFBC. But it was remarkable to me that I think that people are letting up a little bit with the vaccine more available. And I kind of get it and I understand it. But like the the major league players and the NBA players and the NFL guys, don't they realize at this point, like, what is at stake? And for Cleveland, this is the last team that can afford to lose 2 offensive players like that. Honestly, they have one of the worst offenses in baseball.
Look, Franmil is doing whatever he can to never get a season of 600 plate appearances because he knows that everyone in fantasy baseball loves him. He knows that everyone in fantasy baseball thinks he can hit 40 home runs and, you know, you drive in 100 and score 100 runs himself. And he is just committed to the bit. You know, it's like method acting. He just will do whatever is possible to limit his amount of playing time on the field. So he's going to put himself in the doghouse, you know, going to miss time in spring training, and then he'll come back and not be, you know, in full shape because he hasn't been with the team. Right. And then he'll tweak a hammy or, you know, injure a tendon in his arm, or he'll do something so that he has to go on the IL for a little bit. Like, it, to me, it's just an extension of us never getting to realize if Franmil Reyes is actually good or not.
Yeah, well, it looks like probably a week away, which, again, no jeopardy of opening day. But again, at-bats not getting, can't be with the team and all of that. Kobe Bryant's Topps Chrome rookie card refractor, Davis, over the weekend sold for $1.8 million, now putting it close to the top of the all-time card selling list, something that a year ago I never thought we'd be talking about, but we now have this running list. Do you have any Kobe Bryant rookie cards, Davis? Are you the owner of any of them?
No. See, well, I am fractionally invested on the Rally app in one of them. I don't even know which one it is. I just know whichever the most recent one that they sold on Rally, I bought 10 shares of that. But no raw or graded Kobe Bryant cards sitting here in my slab collection on my desk. Pretty pricey to get into the Kobe Bryant market these days.
I'll tell you, I have a good story with a Kobe Bryant rookie card. So when Kobe Bryant came back in 1996-97, I sort of had everybody knew he was going to be great. It was like LeBron coming into the league at the time. So I did buy 6 or 7 base cards of Kobe Bryant's rookie cards. And they're often grading now. I waited a while on them because I knew they were not 10s. Like, they had been in a book, Davis, you know how that goes. Like, I've had them for 20 years, 30 years, and I just knew they weren't 10s. Even some of the cards even stuck to the plastic when I was trying to pull it off. But here is where the story gets a little bit compelling. So back in June, when this is all kind of popping, I'm going through a box of cards, and I find 3 packs of 1996 Los Angeles Lakers collector's choice team set Lakers that I had bought for Shaq, because Shaq was on the front with his new jersey. It was the first year that Shaq was there. But within those sets is Kobe Bryant's 1996 collector's choice rookie card. And I opened all 3 and graded all 3. And I got an 8, a 9, and a 10. And so the 8 and the 9 are not mine anymore. They're somebody else's. And the 10 I still have. And the card's over $1,000. So that's my one really good, I would say, Kobe Bryant rookie card. Don't have any other. All right. From cards to baseball we go. Next, you're on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Sports Grid Network.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today, one of the interesting first pitch forum exercises this weekend over on Baseball HQ was having Davis to take 10 players outside the top 300 in average draft position. So some of the same names that I'm looking at here were the ones that I was looking at this weekend. And honestly, these are players I believe that you wanted to talk about today. So I have no issue going over them. Let's take a look here at the list of starting pitchers, and then you can kind of dive in with me here and tell me what you like or don't like about them. Drew Smyly at 248. So again, these are SP5s in a lot of fantasy leagues, if not beyond. John Means, 226. Eliezer Hernandez of the Marlins, he pitches today. Albert Alzolay, former top prospect of the Cubs. TJ Antone, I'm going to circle him. More curious your thoughts on him for sure. Jameson Taillon, who we know coming back from injury. And then Griffin Canning, who is along the lines of a very long line of pitchers with the Angels, who we've just been waiting on and waiting on. I mean, I guess he's still very young, Griffin Canning, Davis, but I feel like the Angels have had like 15 guys like Griffin Canning that you just are waiting for one of them to be great, right? Like Sean Newcomb, oh, he's going to be great. Or Andrew Heaney, he's going to be great. Shoemaker, he's going to be great. Like, I can just keep going and going. And Garrett Richards.
Yeah, on and on and on, for sure.
Yeah. They've had bad luck with either bad luck or they don't know how to keep their guys healthy. I mean, it's one or the other there with them.
Yeah. So the reason why I wanted to cover this today is because we were talking in the top of the hour about, you know, just starting pitching, getting way pushed up and really having to overpay for, you know, kind of decent starting pitching. So some of the examples of guys that I think are getting pushed up that just would not have the ADP they have in a real year or a normal year. Corbin Burns, Max Fried, Jose Barrios, Kyle Hendricks, you know, these guys who are, they're fine. You know, maybe they offer really strong whip, or maybe they off, they're on a good team, so they have a great amount of wins. They'll have a lot of innings, but are not, you know, strong four category guys, basically. And so if you're going to have that opinion of why I just really don't want to overpay for, you know, the Zach Wheelers and the Ian Andersons of the world, obviously that means you got to have guys that you feel good about late, right? Because you got to get your starting pitching from somewhere. Sure. So I thought that going through some sleeper starting pitchers would be something instructive and useful for the viewers. The first guy I want to talk about is Drew Smyly for the Atlanta Braves, who, of all pitchers who appeared in more than five games last year, Drew Smyly has, I think, one of the 15 best strikeout rates of anyone. 37% strikeout rate last year. Was working on some new pitches last year, working on and kind of mixing up his delivery a little bit. I don't expect him to be great in terms of run prevention. His 4.8 ERA from back in 2016 over 175 innings, that probably strikes me as the type of pitcher he is. He's going to struggle with home runs. You know, first off, he's a lefty, right? So lefties are just more, they give up more home runs than right-handed starting pitchers because they lose the platoon advantage quite often, right? Like you, most teams can field 9 right-handed batters against a left-handed starting pitcher. So those guys struggle a little bit in run prevention. But if his strikeout gains really from the last 2 years, you know, over his last 150 innings pitch, he's at over 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. If he holds, you're talking about a guy who, you know, doesn't do great in whip, doesn't do great in ERA, but is giving you a huge boost to your strikeout. So Smyly was my first guy here. The second guy that I wanted to get your thoughts on is a name that just absolutely makes you shudder, John Means. However, John Means has a whip at like 1 for his career. He doesn't walk anybody, and when he gives up hits, they're home runs. So obviously he crushes your ERA, but in terms of like whip stabilization, he's going to get to 160 innings, and he'll probably have a whip of 1.1. Can you stomach taking John Means?
Probably not. I don't think so. But he, for counting numbers and just strikeouts, if you can live with the rest, I don't think there's any innings restrictions with him. So, I mean, that's one positive way to look at this. What I want to do is throw it back to you on one name who I've heard a lot about in the draft season. I know who he is, but I don't know a lot about, never afraid on this show or any other show to say that I don't know a ton about, but why you would include TJ Antone of the Cincinnati Reds. I kind of have a feeling I know why, but I'd love your thoughts on it because he is definitely a name that's been getting some, you know, attention, but very late attention. Free player, NFBC, you know, toward the end type pick. Who is he? Tell us more about him.
So the first thing you got to look at is you got to look at the Reds rotation. And at the back end, it's Tyler Mahle, who's fine, but, you know, again, a young guy who hasn't had Tommy John yet. So if the guy hasn't had Tommy John yet, you always worry about him disrupting that in the middle of the season. Then it's Wade Miley and it's Michael Lorenzen. So guys who have not earned a starting rotation spot if they are performing poorly. TJ Antone has basically been the best pitcher in spring training right now. He's had a velo spike. He is up to 99 miles an hour with the fastball. And this was not a guy with like loads of prospect hype. Was basically fine in the minor leagues, but not a guy who was ever, you know, cracking the Baseball America top 100 or anything like that. He is he struck out 5 of 7 batters in his debut. Touched 99 miles an hour with the fastball. But what's most interesting to me is when guys like this who have a super strong fastball also have a slider that works really well, because a slider is a pitcher that you throw to same-handed batters and it looks like a fastball and then it moves away from them and it's just a great pitch at generating whiffs. And I think where I'm at with TJ Antone is he just looks like one of these guys who either figured something out with spin rate or with breaking balls that allows him to generate a lot of whiffs kind of before the league catches up with him, right before they watch his tape and everything. And the Reds should be incentivized to give him starts right away, you know, assuming that he is built up. He hasn't thrown 150 innings since 2016, so maybe he starts at the beginning of the year and then moves into the bullpen. Sure. But it basically, any guy with a 99 mile an hour fastball and a slider that gets whiffs who's going to get starts, that's super interesting to me, especially in that very weak division, you know, facing the Pirates and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the ballpark is not great for any Reds pitcher. It seems right. like Sonny Gray has figured that out. Like, that's good, you know. But in general, it's been really tough to own a Reds pitcher only because their ballpark, of all the parks to me, by the way, in the National League, seems to be the easiest one to crank a few out of. Anyone else here you want to highlight before we jump into some other things here? Potluck here. Anyone on the board?
Yeah, the last guy I wanted to talk about was Jameson Taillon, because I didn't even realize until getting into research this last week that I didn't even realize that he was on the Yankees. He opted out in 2020, so he has not pitched since 2019, only threw 37 innings in 2019. But look at what he did in 2018. 191 innings pitched, 3.2 ERA, generated, you know, a ton of fly balls, which does not work as well in Yankee Stadium. He's not going to be wanting to be a fly ball pitcher in Yankee Stadium. But obviously, as a member of the Yankees, you know, you're going to be in a great spot for wins. I mean, if he cranks out 150 innings as a starter for the Yankees, and I mean, you're talking about a guy who should just be a fantasy stud, basically, like, you know, but he just has to earn that role. And I think my sense is that they view him as their number three starter. So I'm pretty interested in Jameson Taillon.
Yeah, I think with Taillon, I mean, you're talking about a perfect spot for him, playing on a really good team, great bullpen. Like, if you said to me, Jameson Taillon, how many seven-inning starts does he have this year? I may say none. But five innings of Taillon, two-run ball, it's going to be a lot of wins, I would think, for him this year, playing in New York for sure. So interesting names that we are providing you, late picks in terms of sleepers, maybe for the pitching position. We'll take a quick break on fantasy sports today. More fantasy talk coming up next. Stay on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
One of the things that you'll start to hear coming out of Major League Baseball spring training in Florida and Arizona is the announcement of the opening day starter for a lot of Major League Baseball teams. You'll start to hear that over the next week or so. And it's really not that difficult to figure out because teams are lining themselves up for opening day on April the 1st. So you can kind of figure out teams' rotation right now, especially next week. There's no doubt about that. We're still about 1 week away from that. One pitcher who was officially named the opening day starter should come as no surprise, Jacob DeGrom of the New York Mets. DeGrom talked to the media yesterday about making his third consecutive opening day start, which puts him in line with Seaver, Gooden, and Santana.
And any time that you get the nod for opening day is a huge honor. And I've said it before, every time I mention with those guys, it's an honor as well. You know, it's I go out there and try to have fun and compete at the best of my ability. And you know, main thing's having fun playing this game. And you're mentioned with guys like that, it truly is an honor. And, you know, it's something that I try not to think too much about. Like I said, trying to keep things simple. But, you know, the more it's mentioned, I guess you start thinking about it. So it definitely is a cool thing.
Davis Seaver, arguably one of the best pitchers of all time. Dwight Gooden's 4 or 5 year run with the Mets, arguably the best run of any pitcher of all time. Johan Santana multiple Cy Young awards. I'm not sure what this really says, if that the Mets just haven't had really good pitchers over the course of their 100-year career, whatever it's been, 50-year career. But it was shocking to me to see that only three pitchers in their franchise history had started three opening days in a row. But then I come to think about it, and if I probably looked around at a lot of other teams and a lot of their histories also, I think we'd probably have a hard time finding several names because of just the volatility of the position.
Yeah, that's the weird thing, is if a starting pitcher has a blister on their thumb, a week before opening day, well, it means they don't get the opening day start. They might have been the best starting pitcher in the rotation, but they don't get the opening day. So even in the grander sense of like, Clayton Kershaw is one of the, 10 best pitchers of like the modern era to me. I'm a big Clayton Kershaw guy. I know lots of people, don't like him because of the playoffs and stuff like that. But like, if he rolled his ankle or something a week and a half before day one, and he doesn't get to pitch until the month after, like, it doesn't mean he's any less great of a pitcher. But yeah, it's just a lot of the best availability is ability, I guess, in terms of opening day starts, because you got to be ready to go for day one, and you have to stay ready to go for many years. And the Mets don't have another superstar pitcher to correspond with Jacob deGrom right now. But I mean, that's not to say now that they have all that money, that special acquisition money. Now, I mean, maybe they are able to sign someone else in a future free agency who will compete with deGrom for day one. Now, my guess is that deGrom will remain the incumbent for many years, and that even if he isn't the best pitcher on staff, they still probably let him go opening day. But that is interesting, and nothing is more fascinating in sports than like little baseball trivia things like that, because of all the things that we place value on and the very long history of baseball.
Yeah, and not to mention Matt Harvey was there, but was thought more highly of than DeGrom. Syndergaard at one point was thought more highly of DeGrom, and they did not make three opening day starts, not even close, just due to the nature of their injuries, for sure. Well, speaking of injuries, there's a fascinating player every year on the fantasy draft board. He's one of those players that, in all likelihood, if you play multiple years of fantasy baseball, you probably don't take him twice, or you haven't taken him twice. The upside is always there for Byron Buxton, former top prospect of the Minnesota Twins, who is about to enter his final year under contract with the Twins and then potentially could hit free agency. He was asked about potentially signing a long-term extension like some of the other players on the team, like Max Kepler, and also if part of him wanting to sign a long-term deal to stay in Minnesota was because it would protect him in case of injury.
Of course I would love an extension. Obviously, I've been blessed to stay with this one team my career, so to be able to just go out there and put on this uniform each and every day, that's something that many guys can't do. And I want to be one of those guys that was there, with that team, that one team, and this place just means a lot. But probably 2-3 days ago, my agents talked a little bit about some contracts, so I'm not sure how far they are, but apparently there are a little bit of discussions about it. So, I try not to worry about that too much. I go out there, play baseball, and let that do the talking.
You feel a little exposed by your injury history, maybe make you want to have the security a little more?
No, I mean, just because I'm injured, money don't mean nothing to me. I mean, I go out there, I play baseball for the fun of it. It's the passion and the love that you have for the game. You don't go out there to play for money. If you go play for money, you won't be worth nothing. So it's just one of those things where if time comes, then like I said, I'm blessed enough and we get a contract going and extended, that's great. But can't really push the issue there and go, saying that just because I'm hurt, I'm going to sign. No, I don't give a damn about how many times I've been injured. It's what I do on the field, and I know I'm going to be on the field. So it's just one of those things where you can't wait to see what happens.
Kind of audio I strive to find every day, Davis, here on the show. To hear players talk like that, pretty refreshing. You know, obviously Buxton is going to play for money. There's no doubt about that. He's going to sign a long-term extension either with the Twins or become a free agent and sign somewhere else. But one of the more fascinating names, Davis, I feel like I'm 5 years into this thing with Byron Buxton. And it's the same thing. You take him in a draft, you do a show like this, and then I turn it over to Davis Maddock and say, Davis, you took Byron Buxton in the 12th round. What is this the year that he could finally stay healthy? And then your response is, well, Craig, look, you know, I've always been like this guy, and this is the year. And it, but I mean, I've been hearing this for 5 years. Wow, did he put some power up last year, kind of, you know, sort of out of nowhere, but he didn't steal as many bases, which is perplexing. But do you go down Buxton Road? Are you a guy that's been down that road? And are you going to do it in 2021?
Well, he's rocked up now. He is up to 213 pounds at his opening day weigh-in. He's played between 190 and 200 in years past. So I think he probably has been working on, you know, he's probably been in the gym. He's been lifting some weights so that he, you know, is not quite as susceptible to some of those soft tissue injuries, would probably be my guess as to what he is aiming at. And I'll say this, Byron, you know, if you don't want to play for the Twins, come to Kansas City. We'll hit you third. You can run as much as you want. You know, you will have the green light whenever you want. You know, Kauffman, not that friendly for hitting home runs, but we're fine if all you want to do is hit doubles and steal bases. We would love to have you in Kansas City. And, you know, we probably are not going to offer you as much money as the Yankees or the Dodgers would, but we would love to have you. I love Byron Buxton. Craig, you got yourself another co-host who's ready to draft Byron Buxton above cost. You know, another co-host who's ready to say, oh, Byron Buxton can hit 250. He can go 2020. He can do, you know, he's Superman in center field for the Minnesota Twins. And I love Byron Buxton. I will continue to draft him. And, you know, that season where he puts together 600 plate appearances, it's going to be amazing. And I'm signed up waiting for it whenever it does happen.
Yeah, I think that in looking at him, and he's had different sort of crazy injuries and issues in the past, I think Davis, it's all defensive, right? Like, it's diving, it's hitting the wall, like, and the way that he plays has really has kind of cost him, because I do think that if healthy, even though the numbers maybe from a batting average perspective wouldn't be that pretty, every other number would be there for him. But it is a matter of just him staying on the field, and that is the key. I also do wonder, with him as a more focal point player on another team, and getting out of Minnesota, what that would do for him. I do find that a little bit interesting there, because when you talk about the Twins, 3-4 years ago, he was the focus. You were talking, now it's like you got to go like 5-6 guys before you even bring him up into the conversation. But very rare, Davis, to hear a player not asked about a contract extension, but to say, yeah, you know, my agents and I were talking about it, because that basically breaks a story right there. Like, now we know that that's a possibility. But aside from the fantasy, what is your inclination? You think he stays with the Twins, or you think that this is it this year?
Yeah, I do think he probably stays with the Twins. I think that if you look at the way their lineup is going to develop, I think they probably need him. I would imagine that this is the last year we see of Nelson Cruz. I mean, I mean, maybe he just keeps playing indefinitely, probably getting to the end for Josh Donaldson as well. So, you know, in terms of their outfield rotation, it is Max Kepler, it's Byron Buxton, and it's Alex Kirilloff. But they will need, because if when Cruz goes, they will need Kepler to hit three, then Donaldson will hit four, or Sano will hit four, and Buxton will be their leadoff guy, you know, in perpetuity as long as he's healthy. So I think they probably get it worked out in Minnesota. I mean, you know, maybe it has to go to arbitration or whatever, but I think they probably will get a deal figured out.
Yeah, they were developing Royce Lewis. I know one of their top prospects, he got hurt. Mm-hmm. He's going to miss the year, and now that's going to put him behind a little bit. I'm curious on this one. I really am, because they have handed out some big money to a couple of their other guys offensively and from a pitching perspective to keep them in Minnesota. They have not yet with him, but make no mistake about it, the next 3 weeks in spring training, it's spring training season. It is also extension season in Major League Baseball. These teams do not want to go into opening day and have to deal with this and have the players deal with it on their head the entire season. So someone is going to get signed to a long-term deal outside of the Tatis deal. It's going to happen. All right, coming up next, it's time for a little fantasy for reality as Davis and I will come back and wrap up the show. So don't go away. We'll be back in just 2 minutes.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back. It is Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock. We're about to hit on a little fantasy or reality. Before we do that, Seattle Seahawks let go of Carlos Dunlap. We're starting to get some little NFL buzz here, it feels like, Davis, a little bit. We got free agency coming next week. The draft, a little bit under 2 months away. I feel like we'll be kicking that around here soon. NCAA, we got the NCAA tournament, the start of Major League Baseball, and the NFL draft. And the Masters. Good time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, so much stuff going on. We have the draft, we have spring training, we have great golf events literally every single weekend. I mean, the PGA Tour right now, and the NBA. I mean, there are so many good, young, exciting players in the NBA, and I don't think that any team is so good in the NBA right now that it, you know, kind of when the Warriors were so good, it just felt like everything was a foregone conclusion. Right. So I love that. I mean, it does just feel kind of like a uniquely good time in sports right now.
Yeah, it's good to have everything back. That's for sure. It's the most important thing. All right, let's start with a little fantasy reality as we end our show today. And the first question, we're almost at the 12-month mark here. I think we're a week away from the 12-month mark of being shut down due to COVID. Fantasy reality, you've become a better cook over the past year.
It's definitely a reality for me. I love my Postmates. I love takeout and stuff, but you know, it's not as good as going out to go sit and eat at your favorite restaurant. You know, you hang out and you have a nice 2-hour dinner. It's just a little bit, it's a little bit less leisurely eating at home. So I have been cooking more. You know, I've become very familiar with olive oil and we actually even grew our own herbs, last summer and fall. You just got an herb garden, you know, oregano and parsley and all that stuff. Did some jalapeno peppers and just a little home garden. So that was nice. I'm pretty into it. It's been a reality.
Yeah. I will say fantasy definitively. Now my wife has become a much better cook, but she's the one that honestly does most of the cooking around here. I'm like a once every 2 week type deal. But we do a lot of cooking here. I know you're going to be shocked. I told somebody this the other day and they were shocked. So I'm guessing, Davis, that you'll be shocked too. I have ordered food to be delivered, but it's usually from the actual place. I have never used Postmates or Uber Eats. Never in my life. Never have used them once. I know it sounds crazy, but I never have.
It does sound crazy. I mean, there is something like generational about it. Like someone of my age, it's just because we order everything through a third party. You know, Amazon does third party stuff. Like, you know, Uber really is just a third party facilitating between you and someone who's willing to drive you. So it's a little bit more natural. I prefer to order from the place itself. And there are a couple places close to us where, you know, you just call in and someone drives it over like a pizza place or whatever. Because that restaurant obviously gets more of your income and the third party, you know, gets less of the transaction. But I do love Postmates. I can't deny it.
Yeah. No, I'm just for some reason, it's escaped me. It just hasn't happened. But I order from places a lot. It's just the third party thing. It's escaped. And it's not that I don't want to. I just haven't. But Amazon absolutely will. I mean, I have a package every day at the front. Okay, let's move on. First pick overall in the NFL draft belongs to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the sentiment is that they'll take Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Fantasy reality, Trevor Lawrence will win a Super Bowl, Davis, /with/Jaguar or plural Jaguars. You get the gist.
Yeah, so I think there are two different facets of this, which is first, will Trevor Lawrence be great? And the second is, will Trevor Lawrence be great as a Jaguar? And, you know, obviously when these guys are great, the NFL team is heavily incentivized to keep them. They have extra incentives in terms of offering a contract extension and everything. I'm going to say, though, and maybe this is controversial, I'm going to already condemn Trevor Lawrence to saying that this is a fallacy for a couple reasons. The first is I think he's great. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on him. But the fact that he is landing in the AFC instead of the NFC is going to make things very difficult for him, I think. Patrick Mahomes is going to be a Kansas City Chief for the next 15 years, right? He's going to play his whole career there. The Chiefs are the king of the mountain in the AFC the way that the Patriots and the Colts were king of the mountain for a long time. And Joe Burrow is basically already in the same situation that Trevor Lawrence is going to be in. Bad team, but singularly talented, right? And I actually think that Joe Burrow is probably slightly better than Trevor Lawrence. And you know, I will adjust that opinion if I need to in the future. So I'm going to say this is a fantasy right now. I'm curious your, you know, your Floridian opinion here on if Trevor Lawrence will win as a Jaguar.
Sure. So there's a couple things. The first is that I love Trevor Lawrence and think he's going to be a superstar in the NFL. Jacksonville, as I used to tell Joe, my former co-host, could not be further in distance to drive than essentially maybe Davis from Kansas City to Denver. Like Jacksonville is like another world, and it's closer to Georgia than it is to Florida. And so you don't get that same sort of, oh, I'm going to play in Florida thing. Like Tom Brady had his choice, Davis. You know, he could have gone to Jacksonville. He went to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is more Florida. Miami is more Florida. The Jaguars, by no fault of their own, were given a franchise, and I don't think that the NFL really thought this thing through. They thought that they were getting the Green Bay of Florida, where it's a small area, but it's a big state, and they'll rally around that small city. It's a big city now, but they'll rally around there and support it. I do like their owner in Shad Khan, and I do think that he wants to win. They're never going to attract free agents there. It's not going to happen. First of all, you're fighting with Miami and Tampa to start with. And on top of it, they've just got a horrible stigma of just not being good for like forever. So the answer is fantasy is not going to win there. I think he'll still be great there, but they're not getting guys to go play. It's not going to happen. It's not a desirable location. And I could make the case that, yeah, I mean, Houston's probably for the next 5 or 10 years a less desirable location, without a doubt, once Watson is gone, for sure. And if you threw another team at me, like Detroit or somewhere, I'd probably say, Davis, you're right. That's probably there too. But they're in the bottom five, and I don't think that's ever going to change. I think other teams will join them in the bottom five, but they'll always be a down near the bottom franchise. I don't see that changing. Even when they were good for those couple of years that they took New England to the end, it was mostly because of their defense. Blake Bortles was there. Fantasy, and it's sad for me to say, because I really want Trevor Lawrence to win. I just don't think it happens in Jacksonville. So, okay, finally. Now, this is a question that you'll have to answer first because it'll be a giveaway for me. Fantasy reality Craig, that's me, watched more than 60 seconds of the All-Star game. Davis, what do you think?
So I'm going to say it's a reality. You at least flipped it on at the beginning, right? I would imagine that you at least flipped it on at the beginning, but if it was Craig watched a quarter or more of the All-Star game, I would say it's a reality. But my guess is you flipped it on, you saw guys shooting three-pointers and messing around with layups, and you were like, you know what, I'm doing something else. I got something better to do. I'm off. I'm going to bed. I'm not finishing this.
Okay, so I'm going to have a qualifier here. There's a couple things. First of all, in terms of the NBA this season, this is the most I've watched live and day after in years for this show. Not even close. I've watched more in the first 3 months of this season than maybe the last 5 years of the NBA. I used to be a huge NBA fan. I had season tickets for the Heat. I used to go to every game, but just, you know, kind of pivoted, went over to baseball. Every day after the NBA games are over, before this show, I go to YouTube. They have the game in 15 minutes. You can watch every single bucket. I watch 5-6 games because I know we're going to be talking about it here on the show. So it's called prep. Did not watch 60 seconds of the game. I feel bad. I have to say I feel bad. But I saw the tweets coming in, Davis. and it was ugly. And I am one that's unfortunately part of the groupthink. Like, if everyone said Coming to America 2 was terrible, I don't think I would have watched it on Saturday night. If everyone said it stinks, I tend to think something stinks. I don't know. It's just me, and my time is valuable. So I saw all these tweets coming in. This is the worst. The contest is the worst. The game is the worst. This is horrible. And I just never tuned it in. I saw probably about 30 seconds on Twitter just watching like people post highlights, and I saw Giannis's press conference at the end. But I am a failure at the All-Star game in 2021. It is a fantasy. I did not see more than 60 seconds of it. I'm sorry.
I enjoyed it, but I like, this is marketed towards me. It's like all like, I'm a big NBA nerd. I really enjoy all these guys. I enjoy watching the personalities interplay. Like, I like watching them jaw with each other. I think it's just cool to watch, like, Dame and Steph were like taking turns shooting like 50 footers. That stuff right. was great to me. They both shot long ones at the end of the second and the fourth quarter. Like, I thought all of that was enjoyable, but I totally get why casual NBA fans would be like, this is stupid. Like they're not trying. There were a couple cool dunks. LaVine had a good dunk. Zion had one good dunk, and Luka actually did a cool one-handed dunk, which I wasn't even like for sure that Luka could dunk. So, you know, it's all, and it's always fun to watch guys like Kyrie or Bradley Beal dunk, who never dunk, you know, in real games. But yeah, and it's whatever. Like, I don't hold it against you, and I get why people don't like it. But I mean, I do. I watch the All-Star game every year.
Yeah, and if things were different, I don't know why I was just not engaged on it at all. But if somebody was like, you know, sometimes I'll pop on to Twitter. I don't live on there, but I'll pop on there. And if everyone's talking about something, I can be influenced to go watch that. But for whatever reason this year, it was just not really on my radar. Plus, not to mention, with all, you know, last week, at the beginning of the week, we really didn't have a lot of baseball games on TV, but now they're starting to broadcast a lot of them on MLB TV, and the teams are starting to broadcast the games. So I'm getting into that. I also had some drafts over the weekend too, so I was paying attention to that. So I'll be back in on the NBA All-Star game hopefully next year. I actually went to the NBA All-Star game. I went to a dunk contest many years ago, so do miss it. And they'll never bring it back to Miami though, Davis, because they have the boat show every year the same weekend, right outside the American Airlines Arena. So that's why, by the way, the All-Star game has not been back to Miami since 1990, I think, something like that. That's why they can't have it there.
Well, they're doing it in Cleveland. They're doing it in Cleveland next year. Can't imagine. I mean, who wants to go to Cleveland? You know, you got your vaccine. We're feeling good. We're working on some herd immunity. People are heading back out into the world. And the NBA is going to Cleveland. I mean, come on. Do it in L.A. Do the first one back with the world open in L.A. I mean, it seems preposterous to do it in Cleveland. But I don't know. I guess the economy there probably needs it, right?
Yeah. Well, I will say this. No matter what happens, and I've been to several Pro Bowls, Major League Baseball All-Star Games, one NHL as well. But I got to tell you that the Pro Bowl is so far behind all of the other All-Star Games, I would take watching 60 minutes of an NBA All-Star Game over 1 minute of a Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl, by far and away,
I never watched the Pro Bowl, ever.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was... That was the 1 year, you know, now they've tried to put the Pro Bowl in Orlando and some other places. The first time they experimented with it was having it in South Florida, and I got credentials for it. So I was going to the Super Bowl, and I went to the Pro Bowl also. I was at the Pro Bowl for 15 minutes and left. It was just, I thought to myself, let me just go get my program. You know, there'll be history here. Rough. Sports Grid 60 is next. Stay on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish, David Smadic. Tomorrow on the show, our good friend Zach Polin is going to be joining us from PC Sports Cards with the latest in the sports card industry. So tune in to tomorrow's show. Also, Joe Pizzapia will be in for me on the first hour of the show, and then I'll be back here for the second hour on Tuesday. All right, let's turn it over to Davis. He's got the Sports Grid 60. What do you got today, Davis?
So last week on my podcast, I interviewed the CEO of Star Stock Market, which is an online, you know, kind of a combination of the Top Shots craze with the physical sports card market. Effectively, you send your cards into them, and then you can frictionlessly buy, sell, trade, all those things online instead of having to trudge yourself to the post office to flip them around. And I've gotten some great responses from people trying out the platform for the very first time. I really like it as someone who doesn't want to go to the post office five times a week. So just want to encourage people to check out Star Stock. It's just a product I really believe in, and I think it has a big, bright future.
All right. Very well said there. You know, for being in the fantasy industry as long as I have, something just kind of occurred to me for the first time over the weekend, being involved in the League of Alternative Baseball Reality and doing shows, talking about my teams, talking about Davis's team, talking about my team, is that why are we so complimentary of everybody else's fantasy team? And it's every single year, and it's virtually every single team. Don't we as hosts owe it to our audience to be transparent with how we feel and not worry about other people's feelings? When you watch the analysis of the NFL and NBA drafts, don't they rip teams and say they made bad moves? But yet in the fantasy industry, everybody's had a great draft. Everybody did the right thing. Everybody can't believe how you got this guy in this round or for this price. Odds are, if you said that somebody had a bad draft, you're probably more likely to be right than wrong, because only one team wins the league. So what are we doing here? Your draft stunk. You did bad. The end. It's okay. You could say it. I will. That'll do it for the show. Thank you, of course, to James and LTN, for Brett, Danny, and Ryan, my co-host, Davis Matic. I'm Craig Mish. See you tomorrow right here at noon on Sports.